Good morning. The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for January 19th, 2023. A quorum is present. Approval of the minutes for January 17th. Representative Newton, this morning, I'll Madam call on
Chair.
You.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I move approval of minutes of January 19th.
So moved. Representative Newton moves the approval of the minutes for January 17th, 2023. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 17th, 2023 are approved. I think at this moment we will take a 5-minute recess and then we'll come back at 8:37. With that, the committee is recessed. Thank you. It's 8:37. I will call the State Government Finance and Policy meeting back to order. Chair Olson, it's very good to see you. Our first bill this morning is House File 19. The earned safe and sick time, or earned sick and safe time. Since you are not a member of the committee, if it's all right with you, I will move that House File 19 be recommended to be re-referred to Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. If you would please state your name for the record and tell us about your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and members of the committee. It's good to be with you. Liz Olson, I am the chief author of House File 19 and have been for a few years working on this legislation, so I'm glad to be here in front of the committee. And so we know Minnesotans care for one another, and we want Minnesota to be a caring state where all our families can be healthy and safe. I'm bringing this bill up today because we all know that everyone gets sick, and the pandemic was another reminder that when people get sick, they should be able to stay home, not just for their own health or that of a loved one, but for the health of all of us. This bill would ensure Minnesota is a state where, regardless of the color of your skin, your income, or where you work, you can stay home to snuggle with a sick child, where you can go to the doctor before your illness goes from bad to worse, where you can take time to recover from an illness or seek support in the wake of a sexual assault without worrying about missing bills or losing your job. Unfortunately, for far too many, especially those we've called essential during this pandemic, this isn't the Minnesota they experience. An estimated 36% of working people, that's about 932,000 Minnesotans, don't have any paid sick and safe time. This means that in a state with the second most Fortune 500 companies per capita, more than a third of working people in our state face a terrible choice between caring for themselves or a loved one in need and the loss of wages or even employment, because in many circumstances, it is still legal for workers to be fired for needing to take time off to care for themselves or a loved one. This is a public health issue, since many of employees least likely to have paid sick and safe time work in jobs such as food service. We're choosing to come in and work on the same side of that sneeze guard as your food, all because they need to earn that paycheck, can have real health implications for the general public. Ultimately, this bill is about our becoming the kind of caring state that I think we all want Minnesota to be. This bill tracks closely with those municipal sick and safe time ordinances that have already passed in 4 cities in Minnesota, including my own, as well as those now enacted in 14 other states, including recently in Colorado and New Mexico, plus another 3 states with even broader paid time off laws, with the addition of Illinois just last week. The bill is before you today for the rulemaking in Article 2, Section 4, Subdivision 2 on lines 14.6 and 14.7, and because of the enterprise-wide cost appropriated to MMB. I'll defer to the Department of Labor and Industry on any rulemaking questions and just focus on those enterprise costs, which can be found in the general fund impact document prepared by the House Fiscal staff. Though, as an aside, I would note that the grants to community organizations are included in the fiscal note on pages 9 and 13. Now, when it comes to state employees, a much higher percentage of workers already have earned sick and safe time that meets most or all of the requirements of the bill, with the possible exception of weather-related uses. And as with the private sector, part-time, intermittent, and temporary employees are those least likely to have the protections of earned sick and safe time. In most cases, the fiscal note observes that the costs are so diffuse and long-term, making them negligible enough not to be considered. The only instance in which MMB computed these enterprise costs is in the specific case of replacement of staffing at the 24/7 operations for those few employees who would have new benefits. These general fund costs for replacement staffing came to $127,000 in fiscal year 24, and with the base for fiscal year 25 and beyond at $261,000. The fiscal note for MMB also includes $17,000 in fiscal year 24 for time card and HR system updates, and $3,000 in future years on ongoing additional payroll costs covering the entire state workforce. Finally, $3,000 is appropriated to MMB in fiscal year 24 for printing costs to meet the notice and posting requirements for all state worksite. One last point that I'd like to cover is the question of the cost to employers, which has come up in past hearings to more than a little confusion and has been raised in the local impact note request in your packets. The simplest answer is that according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics in their quarterly national compensation surveys, employers in our region who offer this benefit report that the average cost of providing paid sick time to employees was only 0.75%, that's 0.75% of total labor cost prior to the pandemic. And even during the pandemic, when people had to stay home for long periods of time, that only went up to 0.9% of total compensation. For a full-time worker, that comes out to between 15 and 19 hours of sick time used per year on average, nowhere near the maximum annual accrual of 48 hours. Why is that? Well, according to the research I mentioned, as well as many other studies, employees simply don't use every hour of sick time they earn as they earn it. They appreciate the security of knowing they can bank it for when they need it to take care of a sick kid or themselves. And the cost to employers don't even take into account the savings they see when they do offer earned sick and safe time. Businesses that provide sick time report less employee turnover, meaning less training costs, less spreading of illness to customers or even coworkers, meaning less absenteeism, lower employer health care costs through better use of preventive care, and lower presenteeism or coming to work sick, all of which means higher productivity, fewer workplace injuries, and a healthier Minnesota. And for small businesses, this legislation also levels the playing field. Many small businesses offer paid sick days throughout Minnesota because they know it's the right thing to do for their employees, their customers, and their communities. But those small businesses are often competing with big box stores and large out-of-state employers that haven't offered the same benefit, all while reaping record profits during the pandemic. This bill levels the playing field by ensuring that all employers provide the basic standard to their Minnesota workers. Thank you, Madam Chair, and there may be testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Olson. I would just like to clarify one piece that you stated. I do not believe that rulemaking is under our jurisdiction, and I would like to ask Mr. Gehring to please clarify that. So, Mr. Gehring from House Research, if you would please clarify.
Madam Chair, so the jurisdiction of this committee is really in your discretion as chair to decide what items are in the committee's purview. There used to be, under the former Government Operations Committee, a House rule that required rulemaking authorizations to come to the Government Operations Committee, but that committee doesn't exist anymore, and the House rule doesn't exist anymore. So it's a judgment of the chair.
Right. I would say that's not in our purview. So thank you. Do you have testifiers that you would like to bring forward?
I don't. I believe we have folks who can answer questions, but this bill has been through many hearings with many testifiers, including this week. So I'm here for what's in your purview today, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Are there any testifiers who would like to speak for or against the bill before we go to questions and discussion? Seeing none, let's go then to discussion of the bill. Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm disappointed to hear that we've now decided to eliminate rulemaking from the Government Operations State Government Finance Committee, because I'm not really sure where else you believe it should go, but here is certainly an important stop along the way, and I'm gravely disappointed by that. This is an expensive bill. It's going to harm small businesses around the state. I know members of my team would like to speak, so I'll be brief. But while I'm not going to be asking for roll calls on the other two bills, we will be asking for a roll call vote on this bill coming out of committee. I will be voting no. I hope my team will be voting no. It's just, it is an undue burden, another undue burden that the majority party is bringing forward to place at the heels and feet of small businesses around the state. I do enjoy a cordial relationship with Chair Olson, but we do disagree on this bill and, you know, probably a handful of others here and there, but this is just a bad bill. Madam Chair, I cannot support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lead Nash, and I would just like anyone listening or the people in the here listening to the debate this morning, I am just following the precedent set by my predecessor about rulemaking. So it is something that this committee has done in the past, and that's why I'm moving forward. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as a small business owner from northwest Minnesota that borders North Dakota, this to me will have an impact. The pandemic had an impact on us. I had employees that couldn't show up. They were sick. I understood that. They stayed home. We shut the business down. So financially, impact was big. When I closed my store in a small town of 2,200 people, and they asked, why are these stores closing early all the time? Because we don't have employees. When you put a effect on like this to offer employees, whether it's 5 employees or 10 employees that are part-time, and you're going to have to shut your business down to cover this, there is an impact to this. This, to me, for me being a freshman legislator and first time seeing this, it bothers me. It bothers me immensely because I take care of my employees. I'm a small business owner. That's why I got into small business. I like to treat it like a family. But when we're going to have a bill coming through that's going to force us to have this time, and, you know, like in the family paid medical is 50 employees or less, you don't have to follow that. This has nothing. This goes right to the bottom of one employee. And it's hard enough in my district to find people to work. And so now people are going to have this. I want people to be able to have time off. I want to be able to enjoy, you know, do what they can. But to force it onto us is a financial impact. So to say that it's not going to affect small businesses, maybe not in metro, but in rural Minnesota, it is. Main Street businesses are going to be impacted. And I would greatly ask support of vote no on this.
Thank you, Representative. I want to make sure everyone heard Representative Nash did call a roll call vote. So when we get to that portion of the committee, a roll call will be held. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions that I'd like to ask. I want to start on line 8.18, which is the paragraph that requires employees to supply employees with notice in English and the primary language of the employee. Is that part of the local, you know, the local cost of this? I mean, do we have any idea the number of languages that this might have to be provided in?
Chair Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And for the purview of this committee, the costs are in the fiscal note about how much we would be giving MMB to be able to provide the notification. And I can pull that up. I had mentioned it in my testimony. It's not much. It's a couple $1,000s that they would need to be able to give the state for being able to post. And that would include following what is required in this law, which is posting in the primary language of the employee.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, sorry.
Yes. Representative Nadeau.
On line 12.19, we're changing the fine that an employer might receive from $1,000 to $10,000. Can you give some background as to why that seems pretty punitive? But I just would like the background on it. I'm sorry, I've never heard this bill before, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Chair Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. I don't think we've had a chance to meet, so it's nice to do it in committee like this. Yeah, so I will. I'm happy to talk more about this, because if you look on lines 13.22 and you look to see, we are talking about an up to $10,000 fine. And it means that we're not talking about a simple mistake, you did something wrong. We're talking about repeated or willfully violated a section or sections of this law. And so this is not talking about, you know, a good intention, or this is something where, you know, an up to $10,000 fine for repeated or willfully violating state law. And I know the Department of Labor can talk to this more, but less than 2% of investigations even result in any sort of penalty, let alone the maximum. So this is an up to, but again, that very rarely even happens that a penalty is issued at all, let alone up to the maximum. And again, it would be repeatedly or willfully violating sections of law.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative Nadeau.
And just one follow-up on that. If it's so few and far between, and it's such a willful act by an employer, why wouldn't we put it at 100,000? I mean, I just don't understand the significance of the 10. And if it's been 1,000 for so long, and I don't want to belabor this, it's just a weird number. It just seems like an arbitrary number to me. And I'm just trying to get an understanding of why not 50,000. I mean, if this is such serious business, and these employers are so out of line. I mean, isn't there another avenue for an employee to follow rather than just having, you know, a state agency impose up to a fine?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. And I believe Department of Labor could better answer. This was their suggestion of the amount that helps with noncompliance. So to have a fee that is hefty enough that the penalty would make sure people are complying with the law. And I think a lot of your colleagues have argued they wouldn't want to see that fee higher. And so understanding what that balance is to make sure that DLI can get businesses to comply. And this is the amount that DLI has suggested.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Nadeau, would you like a member? We do have a representative here. Would you like them to speak to this, or are you fine with the answer given?
No, I think that's fine.
Thank you so much.
Just one more.
All right, we have two other questions, and then Chair Nash, do you mind if you're here for the vote or no?
I would like to be here for the vote.
So. All right, so it's your team. Please make it brief.
Okay. So I think that there's a lot of important things in here that I kind of like. My son is an executive chef. He works in an industry that is historically treated pretty poorly. But I think our job is to try to balance, making sure that he works in an industry that's devastated. I mean, he's an executive chef in Portland, Oregon. He's had four different jobs in less than 7 months because these businesses are going out of business. And I don't think it's because of what we're putting into play here, but I think it's important for us to try to find that balance between how do we make sure that we're not imposing too many conditions on employers. And for me, in my reading of this, it just goes a little bit too far. I think we need to wrap our arms around these small businesses and help them rather than being so punitive. So I just can't support this at this time, but I appreciate you bringing it. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau, and I like the word balance. I heard you say there needs to be a balance. With that, we have Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson. I too am not able to support this bill. In my district, there are many small businesses, and they have struggled heavily, not just because of the pandemic, but because of the state of Minnesota and the continuing rulemaking, policymaking, making it very difficult to maintain a business. I also cannot support this bill because not only will this impact employers, it will also impact every single taxpayer in this state. When you pass laws that go down to, say, the county level, then we have to weed through what the state wants the county to do, which in turn impacts the taxpayers because that will increase our levy. We'll have to hire more people to manage this. It will also impact schools with some of their employees and what they have to do. But I do have a question for you in regards to this. So there is money set aside for training, but I don't see anything in here where there's training for the employers. That's my question. Where is the training for the employers?
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, and thank you, Representative Harder. Again, haven't met everybody yet, so it's nice to meet you in committee. We could certainly have DLI go into more specifics, but it's like with any requirement that employers have to, DLI provides the resources, the ability to notify employers, to provide, and I think you may be referring to the community grant program, which is different than the trainings, notifications, and support to employers. It's like any labor laws. It's the same type of thing. This is another one of those that DLI would be working with employers. And so that is included in this, and DLI can certainly talk more to that, but they already do employer training, and this would be a part of that.
Representative Harder.
Thank you for that. I also want to make mention, as a former county commissioner, I was pretty adamant about the number of laws and rules that came down from the state. In the form of unfunded mandates, they're everywhere. I mean, that really increases the tax burden on everybody. So this bill just isn't an attack on the employers. It's an attack on everyone. We're all going to be paying more. We're already paying more now, and we're not solving anything. I'm unaware of any small business that doesn't work with their employees for whatever situation that comes up. And so, again, I cannot support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Olson, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair, just at the end, I can encompass things into my closing comments.
Thank you very much. Nash, did you have anything you wanted to say, or would you like Chair Olson to wrap?
In the interest of time, I'll just reiterate my opposition to the bill. It's a huge burden that's being forced down the throats of small businesses around the state, and encourage a no vote, and we have the roll call. Yeah, thank you.
Chair Olson, if you'll have closing comments, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the great discussion. I've been carrying this bill for a while, and what this bill is doing is we're not shy about it. We want everyone in our state to have earned sick and safe time, to be able to, you talked about caring for your employees like family. Someone in my family is sick. I want them to be able to stay home, take care of their kid, take care of their health, and not worry about not having money in their pockets to pay their bills. That's the kind of family I believe we all want to be a part of. And so this is about creating that. And I also am in a border city that we are in. Those of you, I think everybody here has been to Duluth. You probably has visited our main streets, our Canal Park, our Lincoln Park. It's small businesses, and they are thriving. In the last committee, we had letters from several of them talking about how this actually helped them weather the pandemic. They didn't have the employee turnover that a lot of small businesses saw. They were able to keep their employees. They were able to bring people in. And you're seeing in St. Paul this week, they're even going to be expanding. So any carve-outs they have, people are walking back because they actually see the benefits to small businesses when we have a healthier employers that are taking care of each other, and more caregivers can spread out the responsibility. If you're the one caregiver in your family who has paid time off, you are always going to be taking it, right? And now more people can spread that too. So this really calls us to be the state that I think we are, and I'm really excited to see this legislation moving forward, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Chair Olson. A roll call has been requested, and I see no further discussion to the bill. I would like to renew my motion that House File 19 is recommended to be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And with that, I will ask the CLA to please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn?
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Lee Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Harder?
No.
Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Joy, no. Good morning, Representative Kosnick.
No.
No. Representative Nadeau?
No.
No. Representative Newton?
Aye.
Newton? Aye. Madam Chair, that's 8 ayes and 5 nays.
With the vote of 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 19 is recommended to be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Thank you, Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we will have Representative Sidney Jordan with House File 194, the Minneapolis State Fire Museum designated.
Madam Chair, just a question.
Yes.
Is it Representative Jordan week in this committee?
It might be. She has awesome legislation. Representative Jordan, welcome to the committee. And since you are not a member of the committee, I will move House File 194 be recommended to be placed on the general register. If you'll please identify yourself and begin your presentation.
Yep. Hi, everyone. My name is Sidney Jordan. I represent 60A here in the Minnesota House. And I'm really excited to be here with you this morning. I used to serve on this committee, and this is a really fun one. So it's nice to meet many of you today. So good morning, Madam Chair, again. I'm pleased to present House File 194 to designate the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Fire Hall and Museum as the State Fire Museum. The Fire Hall and Museum is a truly remarkable gem in my community that celebrates and honors firefighters' rich history statewide. There are artifacts from various stages of history and vintage fire trucks that, yes, you can ride in, from the Metro, the Mankato area, and Fergus Falls. You can see pictures of the brave individuals who saved the lives of Minnesotans for generations and learn about the work of being a first responder today and what has changed and also what's the same from 100 years ago. I invite you all to come to my district to visit. And you will learn that not only is this museum an important site to talk about Minnesota's fire history, but the Fire Hall Museum is also vital for teaching about fire safety and education. Many programs talk about how to best prevent home fires and accidents. They help educate many students, but I know I've picked up a safety tip or two myself. Last summer, I think some of you actually came and saw a demonstration of what a sprinkler system in an apartment building would do. And they had a model apartment and were able to safely set it on fire and demonstrate the difference that sprinklers made. And it was a very much an eye-opening experience about how quickly without sprinkler systems and without the work of firefighters, how quickly all of our possessions could literally burn up. And I hope members support this bill, not just because of its meaning for Minnesota's history, but also because this museum is a special place in my community. I've attended neighborhood meetings to hear what's going on, attended graduation parties and weddings, and art events during our annual Art A Whirl Festival in May, where, yes, I have had the opportunity to ride in one of the antique fire trucks. And I would invite you all to Art A Whirl, but sadly it is always the last weekend of session, and I think unfortunately we will be across the street. Finally, our firefighters have given Minnesotans so much in the past year, my community and yours. Firefighters have braved not only literal fires, but they continue to brave a deadly virus as they keep us safe while we're sick, hurt, and need their help. Since originally authoring this bill, I've personally witnessed our Minneapolis firefighters put out a fire that consumed an entire block in freezing sleet, prevent overdoses, respond to civil unrest in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, and secure a downed wire that was actually in my yard. So honoring this work and telling our firefighter story is a meaningful action this committee can take this morning. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Tom Bryce here to speak more about the museum's vision. Thank you.
Mr. Bryce, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Brace. I'm a former Minnesota State Fire Marshal. I'm here this morning representing the museum. I'm the chair of the board. We have greatly appreciated Representative Jordan's enthusiasm and support for the museum. This piece of legislation is basically simple, but clearly important. We're asking that Bill and Bonnie Daniels Firefighters Hall and Museum, a real mouthful, be designated the State Fire Museum. We're doing that for two reasons. We want to make sure that the entire State Fire Service feels part of this museum, and that the public as a whole realizes that there is a State Fire Museum. In terms of cost, when we're successful, let's speak positively, we might change the letterhead to acknowledge that it's the Minnesota State Fire Museum and maybe a new sign over the door but the importance of recognizing the role that the fire service has played, is currently played, and also will play in the future. Let me just take 15 more seconds. Bill and Bonnie Daniels, who are these people? Bill, or Wilton Daniels, was a captain on the Minneapolis Fire Department. He and his wife enjoyed the market, as in the stock market. They had no children. And in his will, he created a trust, and he wanted the trust to do two things. One, to have a fire museum, and second, a place where retired firefighters, excuse me, retired firefighters could go, and we believe that we have honored that trust through the years. And let me just echo Representative Jordan's comments. Would love to have you visit, particularly on Saturdays, and then we also do other events throughout the week. So thank you for your consideration and deliberation. Stand ready for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brace, for your wonderful testimony, and I've been there. It is truly a gem, and it truly honors stations all across our state. So thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Representative Joy?
As a past volunteer firefighter, I want to echo you guys and say thank you. This means a lot, you know, for firefighters everywhere, to just recognize them and have something like this. That's great. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau.
Good morning, and thank you for coming. Thank you for bringing the bill. I'm happy to support it. I'm just curious, how does one decide with all of the, you know, with all of the fire stations, and I think I'm thinking the Hinckley Fire is probably the most famous fire in Minnesota, I'm guessing. How does one decide which one is the official one? I think it's great. I'm just curious.
Representative Jordan.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the question. To all members, you, Representative Nash just informed me he'll be signed on as a co-author. I think there's room for everyone. One of the reasons why I do think the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Fire Hall would be an excellent candidate for a state fire museum is because it's already supporting the fire departments and has artifacts from 550 of our 700 fire departments in our state. The other thing about other museums is there might be fire-related objects at a lot of our county museums, and obviously we have the great museum in Hinckley, but that museum is only dedicated to one specific fire. This museum is dedicated and has artifacts from departments across the state and is dedicated to firefighting in Minnesota generally. And so I don't know that and I think actually elevating the fact that we have a state fire museum would elevate both the fires of 1918 museum in Hinckley and all of the great vocal history that we have in our county museums too. So that's why I do think that this is a good example. This would also actually be one of the largest firefighting museums in the country. There would be two museums that would be bigger, and most of those would be bigger because they have a lot more trucks. And so since those are primarily dedicated to trucks, and this is a museum dedicated to firefighting as a whole, I think it's a good candidate.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this forward. And to you for your years of service, I will always refer to you as the Fire Marshal Bryce. That's where I think we first met years ago. This is such an important story to tell about our state. Right now, we are really in a bad time, if I could say, in our fire service as we're volunteers. And Representative Joy, you should think about getting back on. But anyways, we need firefighters. We need them throughout the state, and we need EMTs. And so stories like this should be told, so people can come and look at our unique history from everything from the Hinckley Fire to the, I believe it was a New Year's Day fire in downtown Minneapolis that we, Wells Fargo building. There we have some really unique situations, and how we have talent like Fire Marshal Bryce here that helped us become a safer state. Everybody jokes because firefighters, well, we don't have as many calls. Well, that's a good thing because we have gotten to the fire codes and we've done what we had to do through committees like this when we put more regulations in that help people save lives. So I really want to applaud that. I think this is great to tell the story, and it's great that you're working with the other fire museums, and I think this would be a great medallion for us to have right here in the Twin Cities so people can come and see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hewitt. Any further discussion? With that, all those in... I'm sorry. Would you like your closing comments?
I'll be brief, Madam Chair. I love that we're talking about history because I think it's important, but I also really want to emphasize that this is also a life-saving museum. They partner with many school districts to conduct fire safety demonstrations and talk about how to properly use a space heater, how to stop, drop, and roll. So there's a lot of children use this museum and learn basic fire safety, and so do adults. So it's a fun part of all of our history, but it's also a life-saving museum.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And with that, I will renew my motion to recommend House File 194 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? With a unanimous vote, the motion prevails and House File 194 is recommended to be placed on the general register. Thank you again for coming today.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda today, we have Representative Cagle with an open meeting participation conditions amended from a non-public location. Welcome, Representative Cagle. And again, because you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 194 be recommended to be placed on the general, 198 to be recommended to be placed on the general register. Welcome, Representative Cagle. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, Representative Erin Cagle. So House File, this is my perennial, my annual open meetings law bill. I feel like I've been doing this forever. So hopefully this will be the last. So House File 198 is a pretty straightforward bill. It would make participating in governance more accessible and accommodating when local officials are experiencing health issues. This bill simply amends the open meeting laws to allow narrow flexibility for members of the public body to attend meetings from a non-public location. Similar authority was put into place to accommodate military service, but this medical exemption would be allowed no more than 3 times a year and would apply only when advised by a healthcare professional against being in public for a family or personal medical reason. So in your packets, there's a joint letter from county, cities, townships, school boards supporting the legislation. And personal medical challenges are becoming a fact of life, and they should not prevent citizens from participating in their public government and members of the public body from representing their constituents when technology is in place. You know, I think the real intent of the open meetings law was to make sure that we have access to our public officials. And with the changing technology, Zoom has made it so you don't have to actually physically be in the same space to be able to interact with your public officials. So with me, I have two testifiers today. Kathleen Gaylord is first on the list. Oh, what was that?
Sheila Cascaden.
I'm sorry. Wrong name on here.
Thank you, Commissioner, for being with us. And thank you for your service to this body. Previously as well. So welcome to the committee.
I have to say it's nice to be back in this room to see all of you and see all the new faces and former colleagues and new roles. And I'm really happy to be here. My name is Sheila Kiskaden. I'm an Olmsted County Commissioner. I always have to say Olmsted County is center, the county seat is Rochester. So when we come to issues that are related to medical needs, we have a particular affinity to this issue. But having been a county commissioner for 10 years and knowing how technology has changed and knowing that there are times that we are human beings who get ill or have family members who are very ill, but that doesn't necessarily mean that as we are in recovery that we don't want to still do our public service. So now we have an opportunity because of technology to provide a limited exception for those of us who are in medical advice are not to be in the public, to still fulfill what we pledge to do in our elected office. And so I'm here to ask you to make these limited modifications. As you will see in the proposal before you, it is limited to when there is a medical recommendation that the member of the body not be in public, that there that we do have the technology, that transparency is in place for meeting the needs of our general public with our new interactive communications. It's, you know, I don't know how at our county board we are constantly having testimony even from our staff and from the public online. It has become part of our normal life. But there are serious medical conditions where you really shouldn't come to the board meeting. And you might be immunocompromised. You might be recovering from cancer and chemotherapy. You might have just had surgery and your physician advises you to stay home and recover before you go into public. So I just think this is common sense. It's limited to three times a year. We have the technology capacity. It requires a medical recommendation, not just my decision today, I've got a cold and I'm gonna stay home. No, I have to have a medical reason that I should be home on medical advice. And so I would ask that you support this this small exemption, similar to what we've offered to our military when they are called into duty, and also a public official. So I'm happy to answer any questions. I appreciate you offering the bill and your persistence. We all know that sometimes in the legislative process, persistence is what it really takes. And so I would ask for your support for this as a county commissioner and as a person who's had a long service in public office. We know we really get committed to wanting to do our jobs. And so this is a way that we can do it even when we're in recovery. So thank you.
Thank you. And I'll ask that you please stay in the front row and we'll go through the next testifier and then come back for questions thank if that's you. All right. Thank you
thank
so much.
Sure.
We have the mayor of Minnetonka with us.
Thank you. Welcome, mayor. If you'll identify yourself for the record and please begin your testimony.
I will do so. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I want to wish you a happy new year and thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Brad Wearsome. I am the mayor of the city of Minnetonka and a past president of the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm here to testify in favor of enacting House File 198, modifying the open meeting law to authorize a limited exception for members of public bodies to attend their meetings through interactive technology from a non-public location when they have been advised by a medical professional against being in a public place for medical reasons. Allow me to say that I strongly support the open meeting law. In Minnetonka, we take the open meeting law seriously, and council members and staff work diligently to abide by its requirements. I also believe that the open meeting law helps build public trust, and it helps officials demonstrate their serious commitment to good government and transparency. This bill is narrowly crafted to provide limited flexibility for elected officials to navigate medical issues in their lives while managing the duties of their elected office. Authority is limited to three times a year. It requires the advice of a medical professional that a member avoid being in public. I'll conclude my testimony with a brief story. A week ago last Tuesday, I tested positive for COVID-19. I'm wearing a mask today because I'm in the 10th day of my 10-day CDC COVID protocol. Last Friday, Minnetonka held its annual legislative breakfast with state representatives and senators who represent our city. This meeting is valuable, and I will add, I've never missed it before, but I missed it this year, and I look forward to it. I was in isolation and could not attend. Due to adherence to the opening meeting law, I was absent from the meeting and was unable to participate remotely. I did listen in by phone and I was able to say a brief hello to our representative, but I did not participate in the conversation at all. Now, trust me, as a mayor, it is challenging to have a meeting going on in your city and sit there idly by while issues are being discussed with our state representatives and not being able to participate. It was difficult for me, I will be honest about that. But this bill is not about me. It is about appropriately serving the public interest. Please support House File 198 to modestly modify the open meeting law to allow officials to fulfill the duties to which they have been elected when they are advised by a medical professional to avoid public meetings. So thank you so much for the opportunity to testify and be here today, and please support 198.
Thank you, Mayor, and may your health please be restored. With that, Representative Hansen, you had a...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Cagle. I added on the bill while you were testifying there, and you referenced Commissioner Gaylord, who her term is up, represented me in Dakota County, but had repeatedly come to me about a colleague who was going through cancer treatment and was unable to participate but for the ability to do it electronically. So we've heard about this several times. I'm glad that you brought the bill forward, and it's good to see former Senator Cascaden again. I can't believe it's been 10 years that you've been on the county board. So this is a very good thing. It recognizes reality in 2023, and happy to support it.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I forgot to ask if there was anyone in the audience who wanted to testify. Is there any public testimony? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And either to the author or one of the testifiers, can you just walk us through the process of what happens after three meetings and someone's still not able to attend?
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cagle.
I will, Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I'll defer to the county folks. Or I think, though, that they would have to maybe revisit their ability to serve.
And Mr.
But I'm not sure.
Massman, if you'd like to come down as well. Yeah.
So, Madam Chair and members.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Sheila Kinskaden, Olmsted County Commissioner. We are also very diligent about the open meeting law, and our county administrator would certainly note that a member had missed meetings, and we would simply not allow that member to vote. It's a very, very simple, you missed three meetings. Commissioner, you can't vote this time. You can listen in, you can talk, but you cannot vote because you've missed three meetings. And I think that practically, if we knew that someone was in a long recovery, we would probably say, let's think about how long your recovery is and what we have on our agendas coming up. When is it really important? Because if we just have a very routine meeting like we sometimes have, and a lot of consent agenda items, but if we're having a public hearing or something that's a little more controversial or a major policy change, listen in for the non-controversial ones and, you know, hold your vote the time that you can vote for the times that we're really going to have something of substance that we want to be directly accountable to the broader public. That would be my answer, but perhaps Mr. Mossman, that's how I know our county would handle it.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, Matt Mossman, Minnesota Intercounty Association, and Representative Kosnick, I think that that's exactly right. The challenge right now is that when interactive technology is in place, a member of the public body is oftentimes on, but they can't vote or be part of a quorum. They can't actually fulfill the duty. And so if they exceeded, this is not intended to be a solution that would fix a permanent ongoing medical challenge that a member of a public body would have. So after three times per year where they would be able to vote and be part of a quorum, that would cease to be allowable after that time.
Representative Kosnick, did you have a follow-up?
Well, thank you. I just I appreciate that, Madam Chair, and you know I support the intent and what we're trying to do. I just want to make sure that we have it clearly delineated what the counties or cities or other bodies, school boards, should be doing in that regard. And so I hadn't thought about somebody just basically being absent, but present, being absent in person physically, but just monitoring the meeting remotely. I think Representative Harder might have a couple questions that I would be interested in the answer as well.
Thank you so much. But next we'll go to Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Representative Cagle and to Commissioner Cascaden. And I just wanted to say, you know, I think the whole intent of this law is about transparency to the public. And as the commissioner made mention, and I'm sure it's no surprise to anyone here in this committee, I'm a big fan of technology. And we are in a place in time where we have technology that allows us the transparency to have the general public be able to see, to participate with those individuals. And while it may not be ideal to have them not in the room, it is entirely possible to do that, and do that realistically. The one thing that I will say is that this, I also am curious about the three-day piece, but more from the other side of this angle. In fact, I know members of my own city council previously have suffered from illnesses like cancer or some renal issues in which they were more than able-bodied to participate in meetings. They were sharp as a tack, but because of some immune issues, it was best for them to not be in the public sphere, but they were 100% capable of doing the job, of being on task and participating. And so I guess my one hope would be that we would also consider at some point in the future a provision that would allow for special circumstances in which those cases do come up, so that folks can still participate, still be a part of the work that's being done. Finding good public servants, particularly on the local level, is sometimes difficult. And when we have those who are passionate to serve and who are ready, willing, and able to do so, we should make sure that we encourage that. So that would be my only suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. The question that I have, maybe I need just clarification, because this also happened at a county level. So we have the meeting notification where you give notice where the meeting is and the time. And so if somebody at the last minute overnight becomes ill and can't come in, is there any notification on that? How does a county or body to handle that, the public notice?
Mr. Massman, would you like to address that? Or
Madam Chair,
please identify yourself again.
Representative Harder, but I think, well, first of all, an overnight illness would be hard to get the medical authorization that you should not be in public. It could happen, but we've already given notice to the meeting. We've noticed where the meeting is taking place, and so all of our meetings have technology access for people. So we take public comment, and so we always have the technology going. So it would simply, I believe, be an announcement at that particular meeting that Commissioner Kiskaden is not going to join us in person and will be online. In our situation, that would also mean we would not do any, we would do roll call votes, because we had that practice during COVID, that if you were doing online meetings, every vote had to be roll call. So that's another transparency to the public, that how did someone actually vote. And so I think that it's, you know, it is the notice has been given where the meeting is being held, the technology would be in place. And if overnight there wasn't technology, if your county didn't have technology or your school board or whatever, that member would not then be able to participate, because you wouldn't have the technology in place. Mr. Mossman.
And,
Madam Chair, and just building all of that is embracing all of that exactly on point, as Commissioner Kiskaden laid out. Would just add that in addition to the language that's in the bill in front of you, there are other provisions of the chapter that are not on the page that put in place a number of safeguards, and one of them is exactly that the vote needs to be, when there's a member not present, needs to be a roll call vote for transparency. I believe, and I'm a little bit uncertain, I would maybe defer to council, but I believe that the notice requirement also applies, or might primarily apply to, when a member of a public body is going to participate from a public location that is not the meeting location. It could be out of state, it could be someplace else, and they're going to make the public has to have access to that space. So there's also authority to participate on a more regular basis in a meeting from a public location, as long as that alternate public location is noticed. This provision relates to participating from a non-public location, limited to 3 times per year for these medical circumstances. There is also a requirement in law that would have to be reported in the minutes of the meeting in the current statute. So there are safeguards in place for exactly your question.
Thank you for your answer. Was there a follow-up or no? Next, we'll move to...
No.
She might have.
Okay. Sorry. No. Sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Carter, please proceed.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the documentation or the keep track of people voting from elsewhere, you're going to keep track by the meeting minutes, right? So then you'll know that there'll be the three, right, essentially? So public will notice then. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm happy to support this, you know, support this bill. I do worry a little bit about the three meetings. As you know, that could be up to 25% of the meetings of an elected body, and I think that's significant. I don't know if it's the right number or the wrong number. You know, and part of the reason that I think I'm okay with it is that, you know, I don't think anyone is going to intentionally take advantage of this. I mean, I think that this would be, I think that this is going to be reserved for the most, you know, for the most extreme cases, and I don't worry about that. What I do worry about is this, though. I mean, this bill and the open meeting law is all about access to the public. And anytime we erode that access in any way, even though we say we support the open meeting law and, you know, we want to do all these things, I think as we move down this line of eroding that access in any way from any public official, I think we just need to be really, really careful. But like I say, I'm going to support the bill today because I just don't think people will take advantage of it. I think technology has gotten to a point where we are increasing public participation in the process, both from the public and the elected official. So thank you for bringing the bill, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Choi.
A couple of questions. One, you know, being a former mayor recently and just coming out, so we 6 years as mayor, we had some remote stuff going on, and we did post our meetings previous to coming up, and we had our city hall, of course, during the pandemic. They didn't have the doors open, but we had our city hall open, and there was people that had to participate remotely, stuff like that. The three-day rule, I never had anybody, I guess, take a, you know, like overly go that and misuse it. The question I would have in the bill is it says the member has been advised by a healthcare professional. Do we have definition? I'd ask the author, do we have definitions of, like, what healthcare, like, is it a chiropractor? Is it, you know, where do you draw that line? Or just, I guess, I just have a question for that.
I would refer to Ms. Griffin.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Joy, there isn't a definition of healthcare professional in Chapter 13D. I'm not entirely clear on how that could be interpreted. I could look for other definitions of that term in the statutes if that would be helpful for you and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. And Representative Joy, did you have a follow-up?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very briefly, the genesis of this bill had to do with military deployment. We had a city council member in Blaine who was being deployed, and it was for a short-term deployment. I was in the Senate at the time, and Representative Cagle was in the House, and we carried the original bill. That was followed by COVID. And so that's sort of the, you know, how this bill came about, and now that we're just making adjustments to the bill to make sure that it's consistent with what's going on right now. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for continuing.
Thank you. And I will ask our testifiers, you may please take your seat now, and I'll ask Representative Cagle for her closing remarks.
Madam Chair, what is the motion before us? Are we referring this to the General Register? Or?
The motion before us is a motion to recommend House File 198 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Thank you for clarification.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I just might suggest...
Representative Kosnick?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I might suggest without having the clarity on what kind of healthcare professionals recommend this, the author may want to, or the chair may want to reconsider that motion and get some clarity before we head to the floor. Just a suggestion from our side.
I appreciate the suggestion. I will renew my motion if you would like to go forward with your closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And part of it, too, was going back to the Spring Lake Park City Council as well with Jeannie. And so I know Representative Newton, sorry, still getting used to calling him representative.
He's in a better house.
Yeah. He made the right choice to come back. And so this has been kind of a long struggle. And I think, you know, all of us having served remotely for the past 2 years are very glad to be back in this building. Anybody who's been injured or sick, you start to get a little stir crazy and you need that interaction. So I agree. I don't think people will take advantage of it. You know, we're called to do this service and we enjoy being around each other and the people that we are representing. And so I think this is kind of expanding that access to people who can participate. And maybe we one day look at redefining public spaces. You know, if a Zoom room can be defined as a public space. But for now, I think we, you know, allowing folks this exemption for those, you know, specific scenarios is just kind of the right thing to do. So I appreciate support and look forward to discussing it on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. So with that, I will renew my motion to recommend House File 198 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Will this, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? With a unanimous vote, House File 198 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Members, we've worked in record time today. I thank you for your time, and thank you for getting up and driving in the snow this morning. And with that, we are, our next meeting will be January 23rd. What is that next? January 23rd. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.